Welcome to the Strong Enough Podcast, where we talk about the challenges and celebrate the triumphs of people just like you. I'm your host, Claudia. Today's guest is going to talk about how we can make our relationships even stronger by using preventative measures instead of waiting until something negative happens and trying to fix it. She's also going to share why conflict doesn't have to be a bad thing. Please help me welcome the marriage planner, Dr. Sarah Roth. Dr. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I am good, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I am very excited about what we're going to discuss today. Before we jump into that, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure, absolutely, pleasure. Okay, so I am Dr. Sarah, the marriage planner. I am still also a therapist, and I have a small group practice in a suburb of Cleveland called Beechwood, Ohio. And I ended up realizing that I had clients who ended up crossing state lines and, let's say, going to college or moving for a job. And when they were transitioning to something new and difficult, the last thing that they wanted to think about was getting a new therapist. And the reality is that in the therapy world, there is movement about how to, in certain licensure, about, you know, trying to figure out a way around that. And, you know, that's for another day. But it's been frustrating for many therapists and many clients to have this issue. And so a lot of therapists would talk about, you know, this, and it's been kind of this angst for many therapists for a long time about how to get around that. And obviously, of course, working within the realm of our license, which means that we can work only within our state, right? So that's, you know, one issue that came up for me. And the other issue is that I work with a lot of couples. I love my work. I love my therapy work, and I don't plan to ever stop that. And then what ended up happening is that I would have clients who would end up at some point saying, "I wish we knew this earlier. I wish we had these skills earlier. I wish we understood this about relationships earlier, and like before all this damage was done," right? And so I just about myself, I'm married 24 years. I have 5 kids. My oldest son just got married. And, you know, a lot of big stuff where my son coming to me and saying, "Mom, teach me, you're the expert," right? And that was awesome, right? And so for me, this was this transition of, how do we kind of like, where's the starting point, right? Where's the starting point for where to help people and how to make sure that we're giving people the skills and the understanding and the perspectives and all of it of, you know, going into life, right? And of course, when I talk to therapists, let's say who are play therapists or dealing with school situations, right? What they often are saying, and again, my specialty is, I mean, my original training is family therapy. Mm-hmm. What that ends up meaning is that you see kids who are dealing with a difficult situation because of the parent situation, right? Like I was working in an agency once where basically you have people bringing their kid and saying, "Here, fix my kid," right? And what, of course, does that mean? You're going to work with the kid and then send them home to a system that hasn't changed, right? So what I really thought about is we have to be proactive and preventative. And I think that the best way to be doing that is to be working with the engaged and newlywed couples, because we got to have a starting point, right? So the trickle down of, can we, like, where's the top, right? Obviously at some point there's this cycle, right? Okay. Where's, you know, chicken or the egg, right? But at some point there's the question of, where do we start? And so for me, at just at this juncture with my son being engaged and all of these things happening, I was just like, I feel like this is it, right? So I came up with this idea of the marriage planner, of course, based on the idea of the wedding planner, which means all these details that go into the one day, right? The one magical day that you want to have all the beautiful, whatever it is that you're going to have. Have you put that much thought into your marriage and having a successful, happy, long-term, forever marriage? Because nobody goes into marriage thinking, you know, it'll last as long as it lasts, right? And so that's where this came from. And I'm super excited about it, as you can tell. So yeah, that's pretty much in a nutshell where I'm at right now.
I love so many things that you just said. First off, finding a new therapist is horrific. we have talked a lot about therapy on this podcast, and you know, a lot of people are hesitant to even find a therapist to begin with. So once you find one that you connect with, you really don't ever want to let them go. So I feel you on that. It's very frustrating. The other thing that I really love that you talked about was how we don't put the effort into marriage before the marriage. And, you know, I think our states and our laws have even set us up for that. For example, in North Carolina, where I was married very young and divorced, you can get married just that day. You know, you can go get your license and get married and everything's great. To get divorced, though, you have to be legally separated for a year. And let me tell you, all that year does is give you more time to hate your spouse, more ways to conjure up to mess with them or to get back at them or whatever, you know. Yeah. And I have for a long time said, why don't we make it a year before you can get married? You know, why don't we put the emphasis on that? So why do you think as a society, we don't put the emphasis on that?
That is a good question, a really good question. I think part of what I think society deals with, and again, I don't want to get into, you know, this could go in a lot of different ways, right? Okay. I think that there's this idea that to go into marriage, we're somehow trusting people to know what they're doing, right? I mean, you know, just go to Vegas, right? Just, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that looks like, right? And I want to take a step back. I know amazing people who ended up choosing to do that because actually I know some people who ended up deciding to ditch the wedding because of all the stress and details about mm-hmm. it. And, you know, let's just go look, right? But I think that the message of getting divorced is we want to make sure that you're making a good decision. So the interesting thing about that is, okay, we're trusting you to get married, but we're not trusting you to know when you want a divorce, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. It is definitely messed up. I think that part of what I understand to be true is that there are some religious societies, right? There are some religion, you know, et cetera, type pre-Cana, et cetera, right? Who do require mm-hmm. certain, you know, before they get married. You know, I'm Jewish. And so in my world, we do have a certain level of doing things like that. But I think that there's more that really can be done. And I don't think that there's ever a way to make it mandatory. Because I think that, you know, we're still in a society, especially in America, right, where people are going to say, don't give me more rules, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a good idea. And I, you know, want to encourage it as much as I can. I feel really passionately about this because what I know to be true is that if you teach two people the same skills, if you discuss what conflict looks like, discuss things like what are your visions of marriage? Where did your ideas of marriage come from? Create a shared goal, right? Discuss these things from the very beginning. What do I want this to look like, right? Rather than having expectations, this is a really big one for me, right? Because so many relationships end up failing because of expectations. But if you share it with your partner and discuss and communicate what your shared vision, what your vision of marriage looks like, right? Then that's no longer an expectation. It can be a shared vision, a shared dream, a mutual goal, right? And so my point is, can we be intentional? Can we be intentional about what we want this to look like and then continue to adjust? Because as we know, change is inevitable. People evolve. Right. And nothing ever is going to stay the same. And we don't want it to. Okay. Because relationships is like walking up the down escalator. If we are not actively investing in nurturing that relationship, literally all the time, right. And checking in with each other and doing the state of the union type of, you know, stuff, right. Then you will go down inevitably. There's no doubt about it. Right. And so it's just too important not to.
I love that analogy too of the up the down escalator, because I feel like so many people believe that if you find your true love and your soulmate, that it's
love
so
is all
easy.
You need.
Right. Love is all you need. And it is not, unfortunately, it just isn't. So how difficult is it to get people to understand that a great relationship does in fact require work?
Yeah. So I'm still trying to figure out that marketing piece, obviously, but I'm trying to put it out there as this idea of, I don't want to do scare tactics, right? I don't want to be scare tactics. And at the same time, everybody look around you, right? I mean, everybody knows how many relationships fail or how many relationships are unhappy, all of that, right? And so, I mean, obviously from my perspective, I end up having couples coming in for lots of different reasons, right? Disconnected after they've had kids and they just haven't prioritized their marriage, going through a difficult decision about, you know, a career or a move or various things like that. Obviously half the clients I work with is working with, you know, dealing with infidelity. There's lots of extended family stuff that ended up being complicated, mother-in-law stuff. And now that I'm a mother-in-law, holy cow. It is complicated. All of it. It is complicated. I have a whole new perspective of my mother-in-law today. But that's real stuff, right? And how does that impact the couple relationship when really they should be in this bubble, creating their new relationship, right? When you end up inevitably having these other external factors that are, you know, like trying to poke that bubble, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that it is a hard piece to teach people because it kind of, in some ways, to some people, it ends up feeling like if we have to go see a therapist now, then there must be something wrong. And therefore, why are we getting married? And that's why I want to see it as, again, the marriage planner is a hopeful type of thought. It's not drag me to couples therapy, right? You know, it's a hopeful, proactive, preventative. Let's get on the same page. Let's do this together. You know, all of that premarital type of idea. And again, my population is engaged and newlyweds for the most part with a bit of range, but you know, something like that. And to me, it just makes so much sense, you know?
I completely agree with you. And you know, it's very interesting what you said about, well, now if we have to go to therapy, something must be broken. Our society, again, has that stigma about therapy that if for whatever reason, if you're going to therapy, something must be wrong with you that has to be fixed. Yeah. So what you're doing sounds like a step in the right direction of destigmatizing the therapy world and showing that you can be that preventative measure, just like, you know, your primary care provider.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, obviously, with the work being the marriage planner, it needs to be very separate from, you know, my therapy world. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, trying to be as separate as possible, creating something very different about it. The way that I see it is that it's all the benefits of therapy without the limitations of therapy.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, what I think is very interesting is you mentioned a word earlier that a lot of people are afraid of, conflict. That word and confrontation seem to make a lot of people nervous. And I have come to realize that conflict and confrontation don't have to be negative things because they can be an opportunity to share your thoughts and feelings, hear another person's thoughts and feelings, and then understand and potentially make a compromise.
Yep.
So how do you make conflict less scary for people?
So this is actually one of my favorite things to talk about. So like, this is my spiel. Conflict is not a dirty word. Conflict is inevitable. And the question is, can you understand each other enough to have this conversation that doesn't have to escalate into a conflict? I have had people calling me, let's say for therapy, right? Where they're saying, we need a third party to tell us who's right and who's wrong, okay? Now, if you're coming to therapy in order to have a competition of who's right and who's wrong, you are both gonna lose, right? Okay, so the point of conflict actually is mutual understanding. It is not even about resolving the thing that you're coming to the table about, okay? The first step has to be, can we come from a place of understanding that this is a relationship of love and a foundation of trust and respect? And therefore, with that premise, can we have a conversation where we might disagree about something, We might have even strong feelings about something. And can we do that in a way that doesn't have to be critical or demeaning or attacking in any way, right? And so what that means is I work from an EFT perspective in my therapy world, and I'm trying to apply that to the marriage planner. Mm-hmm. So the understanding of EFT, which is emotionally focused couples therapy, is that there is a pattern of interaction that every couple has, and it repeats itself every conflict, no matter what the topic. Okay. So what that typically looks like, okay, so the most common pattern I'll just give, the most common pattern is what we call the pursuer withdrawer, okay? And what that looks like is that the one person will initiate a conversation by saying, I need something from you, okay? So it's either, can you please do this? Can you please not do this? I need something from you. And sometimes it's coming from a place of, I need to connect with you, right? So we need to understand the meaning behind the request. And for some reason, because of each party's internal stuff and their own stuff from childhood and their previous relationships and all that stuff, right? So that the second person ends up hearing it as criticism, okay? It lands on them like a grenade, and they can either shut down and withdraw and say, screw it, I'm not having this conversation, right? Or they get defensive and attack back, which sends a message back to that first person. Do you even care? Does this matter enough to you? Are you gonna show up for me? Are we gonna make it, right? Because when that lands on that second person as criticism, the way that they internalize it is, I can never please you. I can never make you happy. I keep disappointing you. I'm not good enough, etc. Right? Now, again, this is the most common pattern. Of course, we have other ones also, right? Mm-hmm. There's the avoider, right? Which oftentimes means we don't ever fight. Right. I don't know that we'll have time to go into that one right now, but typically what that means is that avoiders avoid for lots of good reasons. I'm afraid of what's going to implode. I don't know how to say this. I've never seen healthy conflict, right? I'm afraid that even if I say it in the nicest way possible, that it will land in a way that you can't hear. And I value this relationship too much to go there. Right. So it's operating out of fear for the most part. Right. And what typically happens there is that if you can't communicate about your feelings, no matter what the feelings are, there ends up being a barrier where if you can't share everything, there's just something walled up, right? That you just are missing a piece of that level of intimacy that you can get to. Right. And so in this pattern, what we really need to get to is the underlying meaning, right? Of, and what does this mean to you? Right. Why does this end up triggering you in this way? Right. And we can get to that, to understand that. Right. And it's some really, really powerful stuff when people are able to really see where each other's coming from. And it can take the sting out of how people internalize what their partner is saying.
What you said earlier about, you know, working through conflict and being mature and not attacking, I feel like this is a message that our entire world needs right now, because everybody's fighting over everything, and yeah, we can't do it in a mature way. Mm-hmm. So I love that, you know, that's one of the things that you're teaching and talking about. It seems like a lot of the stuff that you're doing really applies to pretty much every relationship that somebody will be in.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I agree. And, I'll just add a couple more things that I do with this work in terms of how to apply the aspects of communication and conflict. Mm-hmm. And one of the pieces comes from a great therapy modality called DBT. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that the both and can exist at the same time. Okay. So what this means is we can experience the gamut of emotions at the same time, and they can all be valid. So that's within a person as well as within two people, right? So I joke about this and I say, I want to take this to Congress, right? So the idea here is I can make a statement and I can say, I love my kids, but parenting is hard. What did I just do? I negated the first half of that statement and I put more weight on the second, right? Mm-hmm. What I could say is, I love my kids. And at the same time, what is also true is that parenting is hard, right? So it's not negating any part of my feelings, right? And it's allowing them all to be true at the same time, because that's true for so many things in life, right? When it's two people, can we make space for both people's feelings to be valid? There doesn't ever need to be a place of one person's wrong, right? There's no room for that. There's no room for that, right? So it's simply a matter of coming into the conflict with the understanding of, can I validate your perspective by saying, I can understand that this was very upsetting for you, and just continue validating until there's that shift where you can then say, can I share my perspective about this? It doesn't ever mean that validation means that you have to say, I agree with you or you're right, right? All it means is your feelings are valid no matter what. And we can both have different feelings about this because we're coming from our own life experiences, personality, et cetera, right? Our own stuff. And of course, we're going to feel different about things, right? So validation and using the DBT both and are huge in terms of what I do.
How difficult is it for people, generally speaking, to break down those barriers and issues that they bring from their past and their childhood that have put them into the cycles that they're in?
Yeah. So when I'm working with a couple that's already had some damage, right, that's already had some tough stuff that they're that they've been working through, and therefore they're coming to therapy, right, that looks very different than when I'm working with couples and we're being proactive and preventative. It just is. You're coming into, I mean, obviously anybody who's coming into me engaged or, you know, newlyweds, et cetera, they've been together for some time. They probably have had conflict, right? I mean, chances are they have had conflict. And at the same time, it's still new enough that they can still do the work and apply these things and have more understanding of each other. And it just looks so different when it's proactive and preventative. It just is. And it just is, it's always much more hopeful, because when a couple is coming in, and sometimes couples are coming in with one foot out the door, mm-hmm. right? And the reality actually is that EFT has a high success rate, even for situations like that. But at the same time, there's a lot of work to be done. And sometimes people are just drained, and they don't have the motivation and the energy to do the work, right? And that's fair sometimes if they've just been through the ringer and it's just too much hurt feelings and they just don't know if they could get past the past, right? But again, working from the very beginning, right? And I mean, there's still so much that can be done at the very beginning, right? It just is.
When is it too late? And what I mean by that is, because you want to begin from the beginning with engaged or newlywed couples, you know, does that mean that the rest of us should just throw up our hands and say, well, I guess I can't do it. What can we do?
Right. So of course, what I'm saying is I still work successfully with couples in my therapy practice. This is obviously just one area. Mm-hmm. In fact, I mean, when I was looking at the population that I wanted to work with, the first population that I was looking at working with was my own, right? Mm-hmm. Married with kids, et cetera. Right. That was the first population that I wanted to work with. And then I just ended up just again, because my son got engaged and because it just felt so hopeful, I just decided, and I loved just the marriage planner.
Same.
Yeah. So it just made sense for me to start with that. So I absolutely am a believer in change. My whole therapy practice and my whole therapy, you know, experience has always been with therapy, obviously, and with, you know, couples coming in to work on stuff, and for the most part, successful. Okay. Now, again, you're talking about that the theories of change, you got to come in being motivated, have some self-awareness. And those are the very beginning of the steps of change, right? So if a couple is motivated and willing to do the work and have some self-awareness, is willing to look inside themselves, right? And, you know, obviously, of course, some of that ends up being throughout the course of, you know, the therapy, that they can feel willing to do the work and to be vulnerable when they are hearing from their partner the same. Sometimes what ends up being really hard is that in that state where they're just unsure about where their partner is, and therefore they're just not sure how vulnerable they're willing to be, right? Like, if you're really in this and we're really motivated and willing to do the work, then I'm in this, right? But at the same time, sometimes it ends up being hard. And sometimes there's almost like that, you know, playing chicken of, you know, I don't know how much I'm willing to share if I don't know if you're in this for the long haul, right? So I don't truly ever believe that it's ever too late, to be honest. you know, again, in my therapy practice with couples, I'm for the most part very hopeful, very motivated to doing the work with anyone because I've seen it work. I've seen it work. I've seen it in action, right? And again, the ideas with the marriage planner simply means it just makes more sense to start out from, you know, but again, that doesn't necessarily mean, even, I'm not even talking about working with young couples, right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, you know, of course, any age, right? Of, you know, engaged and newlywed, et cetera. But I think that the same skills and tools and the things that I'm teaching apply to no matter what age, right? And again, I think that just part of the difficulty of doing the work after just means there has been difficult emotions. There has been stuff that's gone on. And so part of the question is, can we work through this? And again, as a therapist, still working with couples, absolutely, 100%, I would say, yes.
Because you are so hopeful and motivated, does that make it more difficult for you when you do encounter a couple that for whatever reason just can't come together or come back together?
So not really, because while I am hopeful and motivated with every couple if they are willing to do the work, at the same time, I am not in the business of saving every marriage. I don't believe that every marriage needs to be saved. I think that sometimes people actually can end up co-parenting. And sometimes I actually continue with couples when they decide to split just to co-parent amicably so that you could do this in a way that doesn't end up getting nasty, because of course we know that that happens. This person who you used to love all of a sudden, right? You know, just this shift that happens. And so I do think that sometimes when people decide to split and they let go of the expectation of each other as it relates to the romantic relationship and what they expected and the loss of the dream and everything associated with what they imagine their future together with this person to be, when they let go of that and can move forward to co-parent, they can sometimes be friends and can co-parent just fine, right? And so I don't ever put any stock in, you know, my own, you know, as if I worked hard at this. I'm just guiding them. I am just the facilitator. And, you know, obviously it is really tough work to come to therapy. In fact, of course, talking about the idea of as if therapy is weakness, are you kidding? You must not have been to therapy if you think that that's what it is, because it takes, oh my gosh, incredible strength and incredible work to look inside yourself. And that is some of the hardest work you could possibly do, right?
I get so stressed out on the days I have to go see my therapist because I spend the day like, oh, what am I going to talk about today? Like, what am I going to share today? So yes, it's never easy, but it is worth it. 100%. What do you say to people in relationships that don't work out and they feel guilty or they feel like they chose a bad person, they chose the wrong person, now they are looking down on themselves as though, you know, well, clearly I don't make good decisions because I picked this person who cheated on me or is an addict or robbed a bank? What do we tell those people?
So I use a DBT concept as well for things like that, which is you did the best with the tools that you had at the time or the knowledge that you had at the time, right? And I say that about, let's say, people who struggle with looking at their parents' mistakes and things like that, right? Which usually is true for most parents in most situations, right? Obviously not all, but just the idea of good, loving, well-intentioned people who might have missed the boat for some things in terms of parenting, and they did the best they could with the tools that they had at the time and the knowledge that they had at the time, right? And so I think that this is true for people who might've made mistakes, who might look at their relationship as a mistake. And what I believe is people are put into your life for a reason, to help you in your own spiritual journey. And I think that the way that we react in every situation, no matter who you're with, right? It's about me. It's not about that person. It's not about what they did or what it's about me. Right. And so I truly do believe this idea of, actually, I'm going to throw in a concept. There's something called post-traumatic growth. Okay. So post-traumatic growth is about going through something tough Now, at the beginning of COVID, for example, this was an amazing concept that I was talking about with my clients, because of course it was a tough thing that everybody was going through, right? And it was a question of, can we be proactive and intentional about going through a tough time right now as a couple, as an individual, with your family, et cetera, in terms of what is it that I want my kids to remember about this time, right? What is it that I can do right now in order to be intentional in this moment, rather than to go through something tough and just look at it as, well, that sucked, right? Okay. So post-traumatic growth is about going through anything, whether as an individual, as a couple, as a family, and being able to look at it and say, I learned more about myself, right? I can understand more about XYZ about the world, or I was able to do, right? And I'm not talking about taking up a hobby, right? I'm talking about, you know, just going through something with, and again, obviously we're talking about, when we talk about post-traumatic growth, of course, we're talking about going through a trauma, right? So clearly we're saying, when you're going through a trauma, you are not always going to be able to be intentional, right? Clearly. Okay. And that's definitely not the expectation, right? It's more about that sometimes people end up getting very stuck in a lot of things when they're going through something and after. And if we could just help to have just some kind of, again, a spiritual understanding of the journey and of what you came out of it, so that it's like you're coming out of the kiln more polished, right? So that you can, and again, I'm not talking about what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's not what I'm saying, right? I'm saying at some point, right, can you come out of it with some more understanding of yourself, just some internal insights or self-awareness or some work that you've done or anything like that, right? That you can come out of it with some understanding of, I don't know why I had to go through that, right? I don't know why. We don't know, right? We're never going to know. And at the same time, that there's some understanding of, I hope I'm a better person today because of it.
I completely agree with you. That is what I try to do in my life, is, you know, look at some of the tough things that we go through. And like you said, you know, it's not that I wanted to go through that, but because I did go through it, at least what can I gain from it? What can I learn? Mm-hmm. What positive things can I learn about myself, or say, well, wow, I didn't know I was this resilient, or I didn't know I was this strong. So it seems like it's really hard for some people to do that, though. Why is that?
I don't know that we have a good answer for that. I think that there's a lot of interesting research on resilience. But I think that the tough thing about that is that there's such a balance that we really have to find the right space for every person about this topic, that I would hate to say something along the lines that makes anyone feel like if they went through a trauma and weren't able to have that aspect, right, that therefore they, you know, I don't know what, you know, because I think that the idea of resilience, of course, we know that there's fascinating research about it and certainly case studies about certain individuals that we could, you know, but at the same time, I'm not talking about necessarily about, you know, oh, look at this person and where they came from, and then comparing it to this other person and why are they, you know, why didn't they, right? You know, I think that it's really more about understanding each person's strengths, where they're coming from. Sometimes it is some internal value system. Sometimes it's about something that they can remember that their grandma taught them, or, you know, something that ends up, you know, just helping to sustain them through something tough, right? And I think that there's lots of different value systems in the world that we can appreciate about all of them in terms of the things that help people to, sometimes it is just put one foot in front of the next, right? And just get to the other side, right? And so I think that it is a hard question to understand that, about why one person, you know, is going to handle this way and why another person, you know, handles it this way. I've been myself very interested and curious about the topic. I have, you know, all my grandparents are Holocaust survivors. And so it's just something that's part of my legacy of trauma in the family, and just understanding all the parts and pieces of what happened and, you know, what that means. And so I'm certainly very fascinated with the research that talks about this. And at the same time, I certainly think that there is this idea of, You know, sometimes it's just one foot in front of the next, right? Everybody, every person has to make their own sense of going through something tough.
I really appreciate that you said that, because I liken that to forgiveness. And what I mean by that is, you know, we always hear, you have to forgive. Oh, it's for you. It's not for them. Everything's not great until you forgive the person. And I personally was really struggling with that, with a situation, because I couldn't forgive the individual. And so I felt like I wasn't healed or progressing. And one day, actually, during a podcast interview with a guest, I realized, you know what? I don't have to forgive. Nobody's making the rules but me. I can move forward without that. So how empowering is it for people to realize that they don't have to fit into a certain box, whether it's resiliency or forgiveness or anything else that they deal with in relationships and in life?
I appreciate that you said that, because it's actually a very interesting topic to me. I agree, and I don't believe that it's ever my agenda to tell someone that it will help heal them if they forgive. I don't believe in that, okay? In fact, there's actually a famous author who is a Holocaust survivor and a psychologist who wrote a book about this, talking about forgiveness, and my grandfather very strongly disagreed. So my viewpoint on forgiveness is that there is this concept that says, I don't know whose quote it is, because it's an awesome quote. Anger is like, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is an awesome quote, because it's so true. And at the same time, letting go, right? Processing and working through something and letting go of something is not the same thing as forgiveness. If someone wronged you in whatever way that was, right? I think that forgiveness is about letting the other person off the hook. I certainly think that we can work on our own feelings, and it's our own process to let go of those feelings so that it doesn't consume us. It's not the same thing as forgiveness to me at all.
I just want to applaud right now. I love it. What are some things that we can do if we are preparing for a relationship? So let's say we are either single and ready to mingle, or maybe not ready to mingle, or we are in a relationship that may be progressing. What can we do to prepare for success?
So I think one important thing to remember is that when someone is going through a difficult relationship breakup, oftentimes their breakup work is, a lot of it is about either self-blame or other blame, okay? It's either trashing that other person, and then your friends all do the same and help support you by trashing the other person, right? Or it's the internal, you know, what did I do wrong? Why was I not enough, right? Mm-hmm. If we could really, after a breakup, right, work through it and understand, so what do I know now about myself that I need, right? Or what do I know about what I cannot tolerate, right? And for me, the work about someone who is out there looking for love, et cetera, is to think to yourself, what are my non-negotiables? In other words, relationships is not like going to the car dealership and saying, I want a red interior and a leather seats and da-da-da, and okay, there's my partner, right? Okay, never is. So I think that when people go into the search for love, right? Sometimes it's not with any thought of what they need, right? Mm-hmm. And so for one person, they're going to, because they think of love as being, and because everyone has a different definition of what love means, right? You know, they might go into love with, you know, into the search for love with, you know, one aspect, right? And might be missing something that actually is really important to them. So to me, it's about being intentional and thinking it through about, you know, what's really important to me and a partner. And part of that is doing the work about what I've seen in other relationships and, you know, things like that. That's number one. Number two is that sometimes people are so hurt after a relationship that they cannot ever see loving again, right? Because it was so brutal, right? So betrayed, right? And the difficulty there, of course, is that they, to some degree, they might assume that they're going to repeat the same mistakes, which could be true. Right? If you don't work through what happened, you could repeat the same mistakes, right? And so for me, it's really about being hopeful with the idea that For example, if you do the marriage planner or things like that, right? There's a lot that is hopeful about how to make a new relationship different. You do not have to repeat the old patterns. You want to understand why those patterns happened. What you saw growing up, you know, did you ever see a healthy relationship? What happened in your previous relationships? How did you show up in that relationship? Right. Those are all important questions. Right. And then to be able to see yourself in that relationship, be very clear on all the parts, and relationships have a lot of moving parts. Right. And again, to be hopeful in that there is a lot that can be done to have this secure relationship, to feel hopeful and confident in this forever love, right? And again, especially if you're doing it from the very beginning and you're on the same page about it and you continue to, you know, because a part of the work, of course, is it's not just something that you learn when it's theoretical. It's not just something that you're doing at the very beginning. Part of the work is to always be checking in, right? You can't just coast once you, okay, filing away this information, assuming by osmosis that I'm going to do it, right? Of course, it means that, you know, continuing to readjust, continuing to have those conversations. Obviously, life's going to change and evolve. Individuals are going to change and evolve. Couples are going to change and evolve. Everything, right?
How do you deal with a couple who, let's say one person is just itching to get to you and do the marriage planning, and the other one is like, oh, we don't need this. Why do we need to do this?
Yeah. So it happens all the time. That's for sure.
Is it usually the guy?
I don't think I'm going to go there. So I think the message that I am putting out there and the message that I believe in is again about the idea of in any other job training, let's say, right? You don't go into any job without job training, right? I mean, let's put it this way, okay? I'll give another analogy with, let's say parenting, right? To become a parent, you need nothing, nothing. To become an adoptive parent or a foster parent, you have to go through some serious training and background checks and which should be 100%, right? But to become a parent, you do not, right? Okay. So just this idea of, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, there needs to be mandatory parenting, although like that would be nice, right? but at the same token, right, there's this idea of wouldn't it make sense then for a relationship that really matters, right? To really make sure that you are setting it up for success, right? So that it doesn't end up being down the road that you're, you know, dragging your partner in, et cetera, right? So I think that there's a lot of ways to go about it. I don't think that it should ever be an ultimatum. I don't think that it should ever be about scare tactics. I think that it should always be about why not have the skills? Why not create more confidence, more foundation, more solid ground underneath us, right? To do this together. If we're in this for the long haul, right? This is important work for us to do now, right? All of that, right? Yeah.
This may be opening a can of worms, but you mentioned ultimatums. Should there ever be an ultimatum in a relationship?
Sometimes I think that people feel forced to because they tried and tried and tried. I also think though that there's a lot of ways to go about something. So for example, if you've ever been to a massage, right, you know that if let's say you're coming at the massage therapist is working at it from working at a sore spot from one angle and keep pressing the same way, right? It's going to really hurt, mm-hmm. right? So what do, right? They go around it, they go near it, they, you know, coming up around it, they're moving the blood flow around and things like that, right? Come at it from different angles, right? So I think that again, I'm not saying that there isn't room for ultimatums ever. I think that people end up in that situation because they feel like they've tried. The question is, what have they tried? And mm-hmm. so I think that there's a lot of ways to come at your partner. And again, the question is, anytime that you're thinking to yourself, should I have this conversation? How should I say it? Da, 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 right? So the question is, how is this going to land for my partner if I say it this way, right? And so then the question is, well, it'll implode. Okay, well then do you want to say it anyway because you feel like you need to say it anyway, right? Or is there another way to say it so that they can hear it, right? So that's always going to be the question. Sometimes it really is how you present it, right? Like, you know, wrap it up in a bow, PR package, right? What kind of, how can you present this? How can you create a vision? Sometimes it might need some imagery. Sometimes it might need some real descriptive stuff as it relates to what you're needing, right? And so it's always, it's never going to be helpful to be coming at your partner by saying, you know, you this, you that, right? And therefore dragging you to therapy, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't work, right? It's really more about, you know, we've been disconnected, right? We have not been happy, right? It's not about saying, let's say I'm not happy, which implies I'm not happy with you, or either, you know, the other person could internalize that as I've fallen out of love with you. I don't know if it's, you know, there's lots of ways that people can hear that, right? Or blaming, right? And mm-hmm. who responds well to blame, right? Yeah. So it's really a matter of making it like this team idea, right? Of I want to be able to envision us retired and happily married together and enjoying our grandchildren. And, you know, I'm just envisioning these holidays, you know, together, da da da, down the road, right? And I'm really struggling to see that right now because I feel we're so disconnected. I'm afraid, really terrified that we're going to, you know, be those empty nesters that have nothing to talk to about anymore, right? I mean, I think that it's those kind of conversations about discussing and sharing feelings. I'm terrified, right? That's what it's really about. It's saying, I know that we have a foundation that we just need some guidance on how to reconnect, right? Those kind of words are just so much more positive and proactive and, you know, obviously not preventative at that point anymore, but, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, it's that combination of, you know, we love each other. We have this foundation, right? We're not broken, damaged, fallen apart, right? And at the same time, we could use some expert guidance, right? On how to, you know, make it to the long haul.
What is one thing that any couple, so whether a new couple or, you know, somebody like me and my husband who are rolling up on 17 years.
Nice.
Thank you. Or my parents who are rolling up on 57 mm-hmm. and haven't killed each other yet. What is one thing that any of those couples could do today to improve their relationship?
Okay. So there's too many things that I would want to say, so I got to pick one. Okay. So one would be, when you do have conflict, do you stop and put your own feelings to the side in order to understand each other, right? So seek first to understand, right? That important piece. I really think that that's a big one. And I'm going to throw in number two, okay? Which is, no matter what your love language is, physical affection is important. And you can really improve things by having routine. I don't mean routine in a boring way. I mean, routine in a 20-second hugs actually are, you know, actually research-based that it really helps. It helps to calm the nervous system and it helps to connect. And just taking those moments within the day, not just a peck on the cheek, right? You know, but that can you lean into each other for that 20-second hug and feel like you're reconnecting and all is okay with the world.
I love that. Now, for the people watching and listening, this doesn't mean you get to go around just hugging everybody. That's not, it's not what we're saying here. Dr. Sarah, we are going to take a quick turn before I let you go. We're going to talk about tattoos. I know that you don't have any tattoos and don't feel well-versed in tattoos, and that's okay, because I'm just going to throw this at you. Let's say that you are going to get a tattoo. It's not going to cost any money. It's not going to hurt. And you can make it disappear whenever you want. So you don't have to live with it forever or even every day. With all these parameters in place, what is something meaningful that you think that you would put on your body?
So I would put on the inside of my wrist, I would put a heart in teal. Yeah.
Because do you want to share why?
Yeah. Well, because I think that the heart is just obviously meaningful about love and relationships. And again, that is what I believe that all humans are wired and the need for relationships and love, no matter what any person is coming into my therapy office about, no matter what it is, it could be any kind of diagnosis, at the core and at the root of everything that people want to talk about, it is relationships. And so just, you know, the heart, of course, being about love and relationships and just that, you know, connected, feeling intimacy, et cetera. So actually I'm going to actually, add to that. I would do actually the concentric, hearts. So the two overlap. Yeah.
And is there a reason that it would be teal?
I love the color. I think that it is, it makes me happy. It is one of my favorite colors. Yeah.
I love it. And I also love that through just that couple minute conversation about tattoos, your tattoo got bigger. So how amazing is that? Yeah. Dr. Sarah, where can people find you? So if they want to look into marriage planning, if they want to look into therapy, or if they want to talk about not getting tattoos, where can they find you?
Sure. Okay. So within the state of Ohio, it's Cleveland Counseling Center is my business. On Facebook and Instagram, I am Dr. Sarah, the marriage planner. Website's still in the works. But so far, yes, Facebook and Instagram.
Perfect. Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for your time today. I think you gave our audience so many great tips, tricks, and information to make their relationships better. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Sarah as much as I did. I truly appreciate how she discussed ways to address conflict that don't have to be negative. I also appreciate her talking about forgiveness and why it isn't necessary for you to move forward. So remember, until next week, you are strong enough and you are worth it.
Thank you for listening to the Strong Enough podcast. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform by searching Strong Enough. And on YouTube, we're on the Spear Talk channel. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Strong Enough Pod. If you have suggestions for an upcoming episode or a future guest, please reach out at strongenoughpod@gmail.com. Remember, you are worth it.